GM, everybody, welcome to Flywheel, your number one source for everything crypto, DeFi, and all that is in between. If you want to know what's going on in the world on chain, well, you've come to the right place. This is DeFi Dave here, Solo Dolo, and I'm here to help you harness the power of the Flywheel. And we go on the POL Flywheel this time. We have on from Bearer Chain, we have on Jack and Camilla. One's the DeFi GigaBrain, the other does DevRel, is in charge of all the developer evangelism. And what I really liked about this episode is you saw these two perspectives, because I know on Flywheel, we really get deep on-chain, really get deep in the trenches on like how all the mechanics work and this and that. And don't worry, Jack gets into that. But we also have Camilla, who brings on the perspective of engineers and researchers who may not be so deep into DeFi and may be actually hesitant into DeFi. And what her role is basically is to be like, hey, DeFi isn't as scary as you think. It's not as, you know, you don't have to be so intimidated by it. In fact, it's actually quite empowering. So I love how we got both perspectives on the show. It's a really great episode. But before we get into it, make sure you go ahead, give us a like, subscribe, hit that bell button on YouTube. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Make sure to follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDave22. And let's get the flywheel spinning. I fractured my hand, so I can't do that. So peace. You can go enjoy the show. Back to Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave, and this time around we have on Bearer Chain once again, but we have the Bearer crew. We have Captain Jack Barrow, otherwise known as Bobby J. Shilla, part of the early Flywheel lore, and we have Cammy as well. Guys, thank you so much for coming on. You know, I've been diving into the Bearer Chain docs since you guys released V2, so I'm super excited to like dig in and go all in on POL. So yeah, thanks so much for joining. Can you give like a little bit of like intro about yourself and how you got into Bearer Chain and what makes you excited about it?
Yeah, sure. I can go first. Thanks for having us. My name is Camila. I lead developer evangelism at Bearer Chain, and I landed at Bearer Chain maybe like 4 months ago at this point. And I ended up at Bearer Chain because I had been following the team for a while, and you know, previous to being at Bearer Chain, I was at Fuel and non-EVML2. And just kind of through that experience, I arrived at this kind of newer thesis that I think eventually the teams that are going to win are those that are able to capture attention outside of the blockchain and technology space, and those who are able to build a really strong brand. And that was kind of the initial like thinking around why I think Bearer Chain is going to be really successful. And, you know, we can get into it a little bit later, but like, I think the teams that are going to win are the ones that are going to have like people who know nothing about crypto wearing like swag that has their logo and the hats and whatever, just because they think it's cool or because they think it's fun or because they think it's interesting. And to me, that was what initially caught my attention about Bearer Chain. And once I started diving in a little bit deeper and chatting with some of the team and kind of learning about what the plans were around POL, to me, as someone who's not a DeFi power user and, you know, who really has never had that background, it felt like a new dimension for how to interact with blockchains in a way that's fun. And it doesn't require me to know like all this like GigaBrain DeFi things that I just personally was never into. So it kind of just felt like a new, I'm playing chess and now I'm playing 3D chess.
Ah, got it. So first you're in it for the memes. You're like, oh, this is cool. And then you dive in and it's like, whoa, there's something real here. There's something really interesting here. It can abstract away a lot of the DeFi stuff that, you know, the gig brains can deal with and people can just have fun on top. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And Jack Barrow.
Captain Jack. What's up? What's up?
How's it going?
New semi-anon. I'm Jack for this.
Semi-anon in the flesh.
Yeah, always. Like my Twitter handle fully doxed, but pretending on with the name every time. I'm Jack. I'm head of DeFi at Bearer Chain. Fairly new to the team, like 2 months, but have been bag holding these NFTs for like 2.5-3 years now, and so
decided early it was community time to, member over here.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, all right, it's time to take my fate into my own hands. But you know, really like working with Smokey and Papa and Home and the whole crew. I think like the team is one of the strongest in the space. Really, really love getting to like build alongside a lot of these teams and do, I don't know, crazy DeFi nerd sniping nonsense. And yeah, it's always great to get reunited. I guess the full lore for the watchers is that I actually used to write as a real anon for Flywheel back in the day, right as they were getting off the ground under the pseudonym Bobby J. Shilla. Was that a Sam idea?
No, it was my idea.
Yeah, amazing name, so I appreciate that. But definitely like one of the most fun times I've had in the space, just like small crew.
I love to hear it.
Building, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it was very DeFi aligned, where it was just like a super small team that were all like really passionate about what we were doing and like trying to figure out the best way to express it. And so,
and also
kind of similar vibes.
Yeah, that was at the beginning of the bear. That was like literally right when it started, post Terra collapse, like beginning of the long winter.
Yeah, we were like ready to be delusional for a very long time. And so that's actually like my greatest strength, I think.
I think it's all of our greatest strengths. It's why we've lasted for so long, honestly.
For sure.
I was going to ask, Jack, what has been like the craziest nerd snipe at Bear Chain?
Oh, good call. I had a pretty fun meeting in the city with like one of the teams a few weeks back where we sat down for coffee and we had like an hour and a half set up. And I basically just like, I like to spend the first like 30 minutes of or 15 to 20 minutes of like a longer meeting, just like trying to get an understanding of exactly like where a team like really wants to be focusing their energy. And then I don't know what happened that day, but like the back hour of that, it was basically just me like full rambling at them in like borderline dissociated way. Like, all right, what if you did like this and this and this? And I actually felt like the Always Sunny meme with like Charlie in front of the whiteboard, like putting together conspiracy theories. But I think there's like, because of the interactions with proof of liquidity, there's like this universe of products that will only be able to be built on Bear Chain. And then even on top of that, right, like if you have these three like most important categories, which are like native apps using POL, like really thoughtful new primitives that may or may not use POL, and like cross-chain apps that enable new functionality with POL, it's really like the overlap of those three, like the center of the Venn diagram, that creates some really, really cool overlap. And so I don't want to, you know, play our hand too early since we're still on testnet and not mainnet. But I think like the ability to take a lot of these DeFi primitives that have existed in isolation oftentimes before and then turn them into like a really functional stack where it's like, you know, before you even stuff something as simple as like, oh, I'm launching a meme coin, like what happens with it afterwards? It's like, okay, it graduates to Radium and then like you have to deal with everything independently. Well, with proof of liquidity, there's like a bunch of things that you can enable right off the shelf for like helping the meme coin scale in interesting ways, like, and then combinations with things like, you know, money markets, perps, baseline style products, like all of these things, if you kind of put the puzzle pieces together in the right way, can make it so that like this suite of tooling that you have, even as like a consumer of DeFi products, becomes like orders of magnitude more interesting.
Got it. So you guys are basically helping with the life cycle of a project. Like, you know, when you said, you have like Pump Dot Fun, it's like gets off the bonding curve, then goes to Radium, and then that's it. It's at like it's been at the mercy of bots like since then. But what you guys are doing at Bear Chain is like, you guys are helping like each step of the way, both on both like a protocol level, but also on, I guess, the social level as well, and everything that's going on there.
Yeah, and that's like the lowest hanging fruit example, just to be clear. Like, I don't think meme coins are the be all end all of DeFi, but like,
of course.
You know, I mean, it was the example I gave, so like, more power to you. But yeah, I think that's the general gist of like, how do you ensure that like, once something happens, there's a logical next step for the user to do that makes it really easy for them to follow along, like, and create an intuitive process for using DeFi.
Got it. And Cammy, you wrote an article recently. Actually, like a bunch of you guys wrote articles. It was like once V2 came out, it was like Bearpalooza of literary content. And so I appreciate that. But in your article, the main gist of it is POL is points, but better. How is that the case?
Okay, so let me recap kind of what I said in the blog post, right? So ecosystem use points to incentivize activity, to incentivize liquidity, to incentivize people to come to their ecosystem and spend their time, spend their capital. This is good because it works in the short term. Yes, people come, they're excited about the promise of getting something that will one day be liquid, that one day they can sell, that one day they can earn profit from, right? But it doesn't really work in the long term because it's kind of mercenary liquidity, mercenary users that come. And then when the next thing comes, they go there in the hopes of doing the same thing. And this continues forever, right? Like, I think this is the story of how everything has worked and since the beginning of time here. But the kind of main point that I wanted to get across in this, like, it's points but better, is that first, kind of the basics that are not really that sexy, but they're still important. In POL, unlike points, it's not, BGT emissions are administered by a set of people versus like a single entity, whether it be the foundation or whether it be, you know, whoever's deciding like what the eligibility is. In POL, the people who decide where emissions go are validators. And this can be influenced by a number of things, which we can get into later. But first and foremost, it's not by a centralized entity, which I think that's something that's important and important to users. Another point is actually Jack and I talked about this, and he's the one that helped me kind of get this down into one sentence, but that BGT, the emissions, the, you know, points equivalent in POL is recursive to the on-chain activity of actual users and actual product growth instead of being the result of, you know, civil users and people just coming to try to game the system. And I think that's another
recursive.
Really,
yeah. What do you mean by recursive? Can you give me like an example?
The more users that, so maybe we should take a step back and maybe we should quickly explain how POL works, because I imagine there'll be listeners who are not super clear on this. So at the very high level, BGT is Barrachain's governance token. BGT can only be earned, it cannot be bought, and it cannot be sold. It can only be one-way burned for Barra by the owner. So it's non-transferable. And the only way to earn BGT is by providing liquidity into kind of like these whitelisted or approved venues. And you can view these live on B2 test and kind of get an idea of what this looks like by looking at what we call the gauges. And there's docs and a bunch of literature for people to read to kind of go deeper. But for now, that's the main gist. BGT can only be earned. And in my blog post, this is the equivalent of points. And so validators, every time they're chosen to build a block, they have what we call a bearishef, which is a per validator breakdown of how they want to distribute emissions for that block. So they can say, I'm validator A, and you know, I really like the team at X, so I'm gonna push some emissions to them. I have some bags in this protocol, so I'm gonna push emissions to them. And maybe I have some social interest in some other protocol, so I'm gonna push emissions to them. And so when we talk about this being recursive to on-chain activity, the more people that we have participating in POL as like people who are providing liquidity and then becoming BGT holders, like this, you know, as more users come in and provide liquidity, there's more BGT holders and there's kind of more users at play and kind of more dimensions that open up versus it being like, I don't know, we're deciding that this action is worth 10 points and this action is worth 5 points, you know, and this action is worth like 15 points. But rather it's actually reflective of the activity that's happening, because as more applications come, as more protocols come, as more of these gauges get whitelisted, there's more opportunity and more kind of whitelisted venues where BGT emissions can flow. And maybe we can get into kind of the mechanics into it a little bit later. But the last point I wanted to make here is that one thing that I think is super interesting that we haven't really written, or I haven't really written about that much, but I want to write more about it, is that the way gauges work is that it's just a rewards vault. And the rewards vault that accepts some asset that says, I'm only accepting this asset, and anyone who stakes this asset is going to get some reward. And with this, you can kind of create these like mini galaxy style like campaigns or journeys or whatever, you know, you want to call them, where you as a protocol can say, here are the actions that you need to take to have the end goal of having this token that can be staked in my rewards vault. So in the same way that you might set up a campaign to say, you know, you have to bridge and then you have to mint an NFT and then you have to do X, Y, or Z action on my chain and then earn points, it could be a lot more kind of direct and concrete and say, my rewards vault accepts Cami token. The only way for you to earn Cami token is to, I don't know, mint this NFT and then stake that NFT. And then after X blocks, sell that NFT or swap that NFT. And then the end result of these operations is you get Cami token. So me as a protocol, I can almost create these mini like galaxy like missions for my users so that they end up with the token that they're looking for to be able to stake in my rewards vault and then earn BGT.
Oh, wait, so you can do complex actions in these gauges?
You can do, so like I said, a gauge is just a smart contract that takes one token. How okay. the user ends up with it is up to the protocol, is up to whoever. So I can say like, hey, okay. I want to make a proposal through BGT governance. I want a gauge. I want validators to be able to push BGT emissions to me. And in this proposal, you say, this is the token that this rewards vault accepts, Cami token. Now, how people get that token is completely, you know, up to the creator of that. It can be something that you can just go on the DEX and swap for. In the same way, it can be something that is earned through a variety of like complex steps. In the same way, it can be just like something in the middle where it's kind of simpler.
Got it. And honestly, BGT sounds so familiar to like the VE systems we know and love, Jack. And I would love to hear your opinion. How does PRL and the gauges on Barrachain, how does it compare to VE systems like Curve and whatnot?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think there is elements of it that are really, really similar. And I think like a lot of the ways that applications will interact with BGT will be in some capacity like almost identical. And so as Cami kind of mentioned, right, within Barrachain, within POL, there's like three user groups, right? It's the end users.
It's more than three users, but yeah, there's three.
Three user groups. There's the end users, there's applications, and there's validators. And the goal is to actually create some method of like normalizing across those different groups. And so for an easy way to understand how Barrachain is different, right? Like looking at existing layer ones, it's really hard to normalize things like staking rate because you are kind of just throwing something out there. I need some amount of network security. There's a chicken and the egg problem. There needs to be sufficient economic security on my chain to actually convince people to launch dApps and take on TVL. But ideally, right, like you don't want the amount of economic security that your chain has to be like meaningfully outpacing the demand for economic security, which is like DeFi TVL, right? And so as a result, if you look at a lot of L1 chains, many of them are paying stakers significantly more for securing the network than they have DeFi TVL. And some chains are as much as like 3.5 times more a year in staking reward inflation than they have TVL, right? And that's like obviously super skewed. And so at a baseline, what you're trying to do is normalize across the consensus, so validators and the execution, users and applications. And the way Barrachain achieves that is through BGT. And so the idea is there's some underlying level of normalization there that isn't necessarily present in a Curve system with things like burning for Barra, which is like the gas in the stake token. But at its core, right, like if you assume the primary interaction that will be happening in the system is applications incentivize validators to put BGT emissions on a Curve pool that are then consumed by users for providing liquidity, that's actually really similar to how Curve operates, right? As an application that's working on Curve, you will only choose to bribe a Curve pool if the amount of CRV emissions that you are putting on that pool is greater than the dollar value of bribes that you're putting on that pool, right? And so the idea is you're adding some efficacy to spend. On Barrachain, I think you can almost view that as like a chain subsidized grants program in some capacity, but one that's actually dictated in real time by the free market rather than like a STIP program or something like that, where you're trying to use a governance platform to allocate rewards preemptively or like a retroactive PGF platform that allocates rewards post. And so you have like this real-time settlement system where an application will say, I will only incentivize a validator if and only if the amount of BGT emissions in dollar value is greater than the incentives I'm giving the validator. And a user will LP in a pool and then stake the BGT token if and only if the rewards rate is sufficient for them to farm it, right? And so from that perspective, it's actually really similar. I think where it gets interesting is some of the incremental levers and like complexity that arise from a L1 blockchain versus a standalone application. In that like BGT, when delegated, becomes a fee generating asset, very similarly to how VECRV is a fee generating asset, right? And so as a result, you can delegate to validators and receive different assets as a fee generating component. But unlike VECRV, which is consistent, there's a different metagame to play in terms of which validator am I actually delegating to. Certain validators might have better relationships in the ecosystem, which will lead to them getting better assets as their incentives, right? Certain validators might do things like take their incentive that are in native tokens and sell them into Honey, which might make it more appealing for users because then you have a real yield fee-bearing asset. But on the other hand, if you're an application and you see this validator selling your native token for Honey every single time, you might be like, I don't want to work with this validator quite as much, right? And then on the other side, if you have a validator that passes along everything in kind, then you can actually view BGT delegated to that validator as like an index token, right? Like you actually stake a single asset and receive a basket of assets in return. And so there's a lot of interesting nuance that arises there. And I think like one of my favorite parts of the system, and I think Cami kind of touched on this earlier with some of the things that she was saying, was the fact that like there's different metagames that can be played, right? And what I mean by that is you can have validators and users and applications that are purely economically motivated, right? As an app, I will only incentivize when the EV is high enough from BGT.
Or the most rational of actors, of course.
Exactly, right? Versus you might also have social games, right? Like I'm let's say I'm an incubator. I'm just making things up here, right? Like don't think that any of this will be live on mainnet necessarily, but I'm just throwing something out there, right? Like I'm Alliance DAO and I have all these really good projects in my portfolio and a lot of them want to launch on Barrachain. And what I might do is take or spin up a Barrachain validator and then only delegate my BGT or only pass my BGT block rewards to the apps that are coming through my incubator. And as a user, I might choose to delegate BGT to them, even though it might not be game theory optimal from an economics perspective, because I perceive that the value that will be generated from the farming rewards on that pool will actually create more value for my tokens that I hold in those applications than just, you know, optimizing for BGT secularly. And then there's this other interesting element where like, I think one of the things that VECRV doesn't always have, aside from like pure market economics, is this normalization factor, right? And so like if people look at their BGT and they go, the amount of fees being generated by this token is insufficient to justify me delegating it to someone, they might choose to burn it for Barra, which doesn't change the numerator of fees, right? Like the total amount of incentives being given to the system, but it does change the amount of tokens that you're spreading those incentives across. And so as a result, you get like this self-normalizing mechanism where if like the fair rate for staking BGT is 7%, based off of like market supply and demand, you will actually get like this normalization factor with Barra that like creates a steadier curve that I find like pretty cool.
Do you know what the expected yield is for like, how do you measure the yield? Because it's like BGT, it has to, it's one way to Barra. And yeah. So like, how do you really like measure the expected yield for?
It kind of depends is the answer.
I guess,
right?
It's like, what's your methodology?
Yeah, it's one of those things where like the amount of yield will, and this is why I had this tweet the other day that was like, most ecosystems are like eco first and use that to drive value to apps, right? It's like the higher the valuation of my ecosystem token is, the more grants are worth. And that's the primary method of user acquisition for applications. And so you have like a more of a fat protocol thesis that underpins the growth side. Barra is like the opposite, right? Like we're fat app thesis, fat Barra thesis is what it's called. And what that actually means, right, is the more value that apps are driving to Barra chain and the more their tokens are worth and their economic systems are worth, the greater the resultant fees are that they are generating for validators that get passed through to users. And so depending on like how successful apps are, depending on the cadence of BGT emissions at any given point in time, depending on like how many people are staking in a validator and what assets are being passed through as staking rewards, you end up with some variable amount. I think like generally based on historical precedent, I would expect to see this somewhere in like, let's call it like the 5-12% range. But again, that's just like purely back of the envelope math. And a lot of it depends on what assets you're receiving in return, right? And that like if you're super early to an application that a validator is delegating to and you get your fees in that native token and then the native token blows up because that application is super successful, uh-oh, right? Like your fees might be 50% or 100%, right? Yeah. But that's not necessarily standardized across all the validators. And that's why picking your validators tactically can actually matter a lot and unlocks like incremental levels of sophistication for the system, right? Like you can do the most general outcome of like, I'm just going to blindly delegate to the largest validator, but there is optimization to be done on the user side in choosing how and who you delegate to.
Yeah, that actually leads to my next question really well. And this is for both of you guys. What are like the best ultimate strategies, whether I'm like a protocol, a user, or a validator, to like optimize for the most BGT rewards?
Let me jump in really quick and finish this thought that Jack started that I think is really interesting that I also haven't written a ton about, but I will write more about it. So me coming from the background of a non like superpower DeFi user, I'm not a trader. One thing that I think gets opened up with POL and Bear Chain is you kind of, through the delegation of BGT to validators and through the existence of incentives and how that works, it kind of lets you speculate on the Bear Chain ecosystem. So like on actual ecosystem projects and the value of their token while outsourcing the actual strategy. So first, let me explain how incentives work. So you as a BGT holder, you are able to delegate your BGT to any validator that you choose. How might you evaluate a validator is, I think, right? Like based on your risk profile and probably based on like what percentage commission they're taking. So if I'm saying, okay, I'm just going to make this up. Let's say Coinbase is a validator and you know they want to optimize for not being super risky. And so they're only accepting incentives in Honey in a stablecoin. That's a totally different risk profile than a different validator that says, you know, I'm accepting like these incentives in native token of protocols that are very new, that they're going through, you know, price discovery, that, you know, who knows what those prices will look like in 6 months to a year. And so me, I can say, okay, my risk profile is, you know, I want to be risk on or I want to be somewhere in the middle. And so I get to select my risk profile while outsourcing the actual strategy, right? Because I'm just going to say, I'm going to delegate to validator A, and they're the ones that are doing the work of evaluating, do I accept this incentive or this incentive? Do I think this incentive will have a better economic outcome for me versus this one? And then me as a delegator, all I'm doing is I'm getting a piece of that incentive, you know, whatever percentage is for me based on the validator that I chose. So I think that's another like metagame that's kind of interesting for users, and it lets you speculate on the protocol itself, but it also lets you speculate on the applications building on Bear Chain without needing an edge, you know, like without having to have like super specialized knowledge. You can kind of like outsource that and just sit back, choose your risk strategy. And like, it's just a new dimension that I think hasn't really existed before. But the question that you asked us just now was kind of what are the strategies that exist, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give you like the very vanilla answer, and then Jack will give you the like super Powerpuff Girl answer, okay?
He's a super Powerpuff Girl. Just look at him.
Yeah, no, he is. He's going to tell you like all the like weird DeFi shit. I'm going to give you like the very basic like number one answer. Like,
This is the iceberg, and this is the top of the iceberg, and this is like Jack will be like super down. He's like the weirdo like in the shadow like with his chart or whatever. It's like, always build up your chart. So, but yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the very vanilla, like, okay, you're new to POL, you're new to Bear Chain, and you're asking like, how can I strategize to earn the most BGT? And I'm actually working on a written piece called How to Farm BGT. And the crux of it is, one, the first thing you do is like, you look at the available gauges, and gauges are the things that are these like whitelisted venues where you can provide liquidity. First, you look at those and you say, these are my only options. Only the things that are listed here is what's eligible to earn me BGT. You LP into one of them, whether it be into a specific pool in BEX or in any of the other native dApps. Then you have an LP token, right? Or some token that represents the action that you took, that's representative of the action that you took. Then you go and stake this. In doing this, now have you started to earn BGT, only once you've staked that representative token. Okay. And once you have this, the next like very 101 step is to then align with a validator that's pushing emissions to this pool. If I provided liquidity into the Captain Jack Barrow ETH pool, then as more emissions get pushed there, more BGT rewards go to me because I'm one of the people that LP'd into this pool. So the next like kind of 101 vanilla step is to align with the validator that's pushing emissions to a place where you've already provided liquidity. And then finally, in this 101 map is to then also consider when you're thinking about validators, like what your risk strategy is for, you know, do you want to accept native tokens, or are you looking for a validator that's going to give you honey, or are you looking for something in the middle? Are you willing to take like a validator that's taking a big commission? And so I think that's kind of the like very intro, I'm new to Bear Chain, how do I think about my BGT strategy? And then Jack, give them the my brain is so big.
Give us a level five.
I want all the BGT.
Yeah, my brain is so wrinkly right now. I think the first thing I'll like just quickly clarify on Cami's thing too is like at the start, it will be only the native dApps that you can use for BGT. That will change at some point, you know, fairly early on after the system is stable and everything looks good. At that point, you'll open it up to third-party application gauges. And so if you have like a UniV3 style LP on Kodiak or like an ALM from like a Kodiak island, then you can use that receipt token to create gauges on, which in turn creates like some pretty interesting game theory, right? And so like taking Cami's points and taking them just one step further is where I think it starts to get really fun from like a DeFi mechanism design perspective, in that like, if you have this this basic universe of like optimization, and that like, what is my risk tolerance as a user? How does this validator actually like generate fees for me? And what assets am I actually providing liquidity for to earn BGT, right? Like that sets up your baseline. And so you might have a different baseline rewards rate that you need for farming the same way you would in like standard DeFi farming, if like the asset is in like a UniV2 pool and is highly volatile, right? Because you understand that you're taking like more impermanent loss risk or any of these other things. And then on the other hand, you can have like these other pools that might be really interesting, right? Where if you have like an ALM managed UniV3 stable pool, even if like, let's say the baseline rate is 5% in BGT emissions, and you might look at that and go like, eh, that's like not super interesting. If I then come in on the DeFi side and I provide an easy mechanism within a money market to take your BGT staked LP token for that money, for that liquidity pool, that stable pool, and then give you the ability to leverage it up 5x, because I know that at any given point in time, I can simply unstake the assets, decompose the LP token, and repay the loan on a liquidation, right, then all of a sudden it starts to get really interesting, because maybe you can actually be earning 25% on that pool because you're integrating the BGT receipt token into a money market and providing leverage to a system. And so all of a sudden you can start to get these different SKUs, like depending on your risk tolerance, right? Like ideally you provide people the optionality to do that for both like the really high value, you know, strongly kosher assets. It might be like a more trad money market, like someone's spinning up like a Morpho or an Euler or Dolomite vault on top of that, that allows you to like leverage those USDC LP positions because they have good logic to handle that. But then you might have like your baseline pump.fun meme coin that's up only. And so you can set your liquidation price in the money market at like the floor value of the baseline asset. And then you can use something like Gummy, which is an Oracle-less money market, to allow people to like leverage that position up via that, right? And like, you know, you'll have a lower loan to value and all these other factors depending on the liquidity. But it's something you can actually do with a very high degree of confidence while also still tapping into POL. And that was like one of those things that I was alluding to earlier on the meme coin side, right? Like custom bonding curves, those interact with POL in like a really unique way. Up only assets with a fixed liquidation price allow you to do really cool stuff on the liquidation market. Taking your LP token, like that LP becomes functionally like locked for some period of time until it's unsafe from BGT station. That then becomes liquidity that you can use for perps on like an exponents type setup. And so it's about like taking all of these baseline projects and then integrating them out of the box so that like as people are trading them on exponents, that generates volumes on the pool, which increases the base rate of return for a pump.fun asset, which increases the floor price, which increases the liquidation price, which allows you to leverage higher, which makes the token go higher, right? And increases the rate of BGT emissions. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is actually pretty degen and the rate of return is great, even though it's a super high risk, high volatility asset. And so that's kind of like what I'm saying when a lot of it depends on like user risk tolerance at the end of the day. Like there's going to be really good opportunities out there. And then there's these other constraining factors of like Cami said, validator commission rate, where like, you know, for, I think for economically motivated actors, those validator commission rates will probably trend towards zero over the medium to long-term period of time. As like, because they want to, the way you can think about it on the validator side, right, is like the amount of BGT that you control in emissions is effectively scaling with the amount of BGT that you have delegated to you. And the amount of BGT emissions that you control is what necessarily determines the fees that you generate as a validator, right? Like the more BGT you emit, the more ability you have to take fees for that BGT emission. And so as a validator, like your game theory optimal outcome is like, I want to control as much BGT as possible. And so as a result too, there's like this other element of like, okay, if I'm economically motivated, how do I do that? And if I'm socially motivated, like what does that as well, right? Like you can have these Gitcoin style or like Galaxy style validators that might be much more focused on like social alignment, where even if they have a 80% commission rate, I might continue to choose to delegate to them because it's going to public goods that like benefit the ecosystem that I have bags in or something like that.
This sounds like a giant playground, a giant DeFi playground, giant carnival, all these different rides. You have Kodiak ride, you have Exponents, you have Gummy. They sound like stands, like all of them sound like stands.
100%.
And then you combine the stands together to make a super ride and just like lever up your risk and have fun as a user.
Yeah, the goal is to like...
Or you can go to the kiddie pool.
Yeah, no, exactly, right? Like the goal is to make it as easy as possible off the shelf to interact with the ecosystem at a baseline. Think of that as almost like an LST type experience or like a solo staker type experience. But you should also have like a nearly limitless combination of money Legos that you can stack on top of each other to create something really unique. And I think that's like one of the things that makes Parachain really interesting on the L1 side is like, we're not coming in saying, oh, we're the Ethereum killer or we're the Solana killer. Like our tech is going to beat your tech, right? Yeah. It's like, no, our Parachain should be the place ideally where regardless of what POS L1 asset or DeFi asset or stablecoin or whatever, this should be the place that you can earn the best yield on that asset at scale.
Got it. And you're talking about block rewards just now, and I was reading the updated docs and it said that it's basically now proportional to the BGT staked, rather than just have like uniform rewards at every block. Can you guys go into that and like the decision behind that and like how that works compared to like what else is going on with other chains?
So it's proportional to the amount of BGT that's delegated to that.
Oh, block. Delegated. Sorry. Delegate.
Uh-huh. And yeah, it scales linearly. So as more BGT gets delegated to you, the more block rewards you're able to earn. And maybe Jack can get into like the whys, but there's one thing that I have been thinking of, like how to explain POL, because I think a lot of my audience is not like these DeFi power users, but rather kind of more like vanilla, you know, blockchain engineers and, you know, people who are much more focused on that side. And I think they come from the same perspective as I do. And so it just came to my mind as you were talking about the kiddie pool and like the amusement park. Is that like POL should be and will be like a good makeup foundation. It should be buildable. Like it should be choose your own journey. You know, there's foundation like makeup where you just put on a little and then you get the coverage you want. And then you put more and then you get more coverage. And then you put more and you look like you're a model, like you're in a movie. And then you put more and you look like a drag queen. You know, like that's the type of experience that POL should offer, where it's like, I can play in the kiddie pool and like earn yield and have a great time. And then I can also like build all of these things on top of each other and end up with something really, you know, for the profile of a power user, like someone like you or Jack.
And we'll have the drag queen makeup on.
Yeah, you guys are going to have the drag queen makeup
on. Really dragged out.
The natural
sense. Have you thought about doing, that's actually a good idea. Imagine if you did a tutorial, like a makeup tutorial, but it's actually you explaining Parachain with all the foundations. Yeah, yield strategies.
Jack, I'm sorry to tell you this, but we're going to have to do your makeup for a YouTube video.
It's all right. I feel like I could, I got the eyelashes, so as long as you go hard on those, like, we'll look pretty good, I think.
Can you guys do Spence?
Yeah, Spence will look really good. I think, like, Cammy covered a lot of the points. The question is, why do it this way, right? And so the idea is there's kind of like two components to how the consensus layer works, right? The first is that in Parachain V1, it was different. So like if you haven't spent a little bit of time on Parachain lately, like I would encourage you diving back in because this mechanism has changed, I think, for the better. And so for V2, the way that it works is every validator has an equal chance of winning a block, right? And so what that does is, remember earlier when I was talking about the normalization across the consensus and execution layers, what that does is it helps create like a statistically relevant minimum block reward or minimum APR that you can generate as a validator with just bearer stake and no BGT, right? And the idea is like in the same way that with POL, you are creating value for the users that interact with the ecosystem the most through providing liquidity, you're doing the same thing on the validator side, but in the other direction. If you are a validator that doesn't want to participate in proof of liquidity and doesn't want to get BGC delegations and doesn't want to deal with the bribe mechanisms, you're going to make less money, right? Straight up. And so what that does is you set a, basically like a floor rate for like what is the value created by this validator, and then a rate that functionally scales up with the amount of BGC that you can have delegated. And so like if you're an early mover in the ecosystem that gets a ton of value alignment and a ton of BGT delegated, you can kind of create like a little bit of a BGT black hole where you are controlling the majority of emissions potentially at some given block. You generate a ton of fees. Those fees generated raise the APR in like the short term that increases your BGT delegation until things normalize again. And so as a result, it really incentivizes active participation within proof of liquidity on the validator side, which I think is something that's pretty unique. Like normally these different layers of the stack are really firmly separated. And then the goal is, you know, in a universe where you have Bera stake and BGT emissions, it creates some like meaningful normalization factor as well across the two, where, you know, users are strongly incentivized to delegate BGT and validators are strongly incentivized to participate in proof of liquidity, because at the end of the day, that's going to be what like makes or breaks Bera chain, right? Like if people are participating in proof of liquidity, it's just another L1 blockchain. And like, that's not what we're here for. And I think that's not what anyone else is here for. And so the goal is to like, how do you optimize for some of that like convexity within the system that we want, right? Like the flywheel, so to speak, of Bera chain.
Flywheel. If I had a shot, I'd take it right now.
Hell yeah. And like while like minimizing some of the downside convexity as well through stuff like the burn mechanism and other things like that. And so, you know, over time, over testnet, as we do some more risk modeling, like some of these parameters might change. But I think the general system is pretty consistent across the board, and I think like really achieves what we're trying to do.
Got it. And Cammy, so coming at this from a non-DeFi perspective, what's it like been evangelizing to people that are interested in Bera chain that isn't, you know, that doesn't have the background of Jack or myself? And like, what are other ways you communicate with them on how Bera chain works?
I think it's been, for me personally in this role, like it's been kind of a wake up call to how separated the engineering and kind of the tech side of crypto is from the financial part. Because, you know, up until I worked at Bera chain, like I literally never, ever, ever cared about or even thought about anything DeFi related ever. Like the most DeFi thing that I did was like swap stuff because I had to, you know, because I needed some other asset because I wanted to like off ramp, etc. And I kind of think that a lot of my audience and a lot of my network sees DeFi and sees kind of that part of crypto as like, oh, that's for, you know, people who like the casinos and people who want the pumped up fun. And, you know, they kind of see it as like, oh, that's the others, you know? And I think
the others.
Yeah. And I think one thing that's been important for me is to kind of bridge that gap and almost kind of say like, look, we're in this system and, you know, a lot of the upside that doesn't exist in other markets exists in crypto, but they only exist if you participate in them, right? And trying to find ways to kind of almost just like make it socially okay for them to think like, yes, you can make money in crypto by like participating in these things too. You don't just have to be like, oh, I'm just a researcher or I'm just an engineer. And like, I don't really believe in like, you know, X, Y,
or Z. Is there like a real bias with like engineers and researchers? Like, I don't want to do all that. That stuff seems like a casino. Like, yeah, you know.
I mean, I've seen, the reactions to even the meme coin like last 3-4 months have been like, I can't believe we're doing this. Like, this is ruining crypto. Like, this is everything that we're, you know, against. And some of those takes like, and not to say, right, like some of those takes are correct. Some of those takes are good. But I'm just saying, I think there is like that divide where they kind of see it as like a bad thing. And I think a lot of my work has been around evangelizing that it's not just like a bad thing that exists, but rather like it's part of what makes the system complete, right? Like it's part of the thing that we work in. And there's ways and there's systems like POL and like Bera chain and like many others where you can participate and you know, kind of like stay true to the things that you believe in, but also participate in the thing that you're trying to build.
Yeah, on a long enough time scale, like all these meme coins are PVP and they race to zero, but something like Bera chain obviously is PVE with POL. And as the system grows, it gets more users, more people are participating, there more protocols get online, it just grows and gets bigger. So there's like a clear, I guess your main challenge, if I'm not wrong, is convincing them, hey, this is actually PVE on a long enough time scale. Don't compare it to like other things you see online.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, kind of like being like, these are, you know, like, these are your safe people when you're a kid. Like, these are your safe people. These are your safe projects, you know, like, mm-hmm. these are safe places that you can go and experiment and like do these fun things. You know, maybe mitigating some of the things that they think are bad.
Yeah, I got it. Jack, I have a question for you. Something I've been thinking about. So Bearer Chain, all about, you know, POL, proof of liquidity, all the liquidities on chain. But like what we've seen on Ethereum and a lot of other chains is the rise of solvers and RFQs and whatnot. And I'm just like wondering, like, how does that affect Bearer Chain at all? You know, what's the, like, you know, what's the point of POL if like everything's being routed through a solver?
It's a good question. I think the reality is in the short term that while solver markets are hugely beneficial, I think the scope of intents is a little bit over its skis right now.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by scope?
Yeah, I'm gonna dive in there for you. Don't worry.
Okay.
And so like high level, right? I think there are things that intents are really, really good for, right? Like cross-chain bridging, especially in a universe where there's like hundreds of L2s and like alt L1s and all these other things, right? That is actually really meaningful because if you look at like three different quick models as a baseline, you have like UniV2 style pools that are like passive liquidity providers on a bridge, and then like V3 or routing style tokens, so think like Synapse or etc., like on that side where all of the pairs are routed through like ETHs and USDC SYN and so on. And then intents, right? Like in that order, the amount of capital that is required on each chain to fulfill some amount of bridging size with some amount of finality gets lower and lower, right? And so for things like intents cross-chain, I think that they're actually really meaningful because there's a lot of really cool work that's being done by people like Fastlane and Across and all these other groups that mitigates the amount of inventory a market maker needs on every chain to fill orders. And then it minimizes the time that you need to settle that order, because what's effectively happening in the background, right, is that let's say you bridge from ARB mainnet to ETH mainnet or from ARB to OP and you get filled in 15 minutes. What's actually happening in the background? Well, like that market maker is actually taking the bridge duration risk in the background and they're charging you a fee for that. And then the shorter that duration risk gets, whether it's through shared sequencers or the ag layer or other functions like that, the cheaper it gets to settle cross chain and the less inventory you need on every chain because you can rebalance your books really effectively, right? And so I think that's like a really good example of a thoughtful use case for intents and solvers. On the same level, right, I think that solving for things like swaps is actually like not always the best outcome. And there's a huge amount of value for passive LPU, at least within DeFi and like within crypto as it stands right now, right? It's like, I want to know that at any given point in time, there is sufficient liquidity for me to fill this order today in this network. Or if there is not, like there should be a direct incentive to increase the amount of liquidity on the network in a way that is, you know, verifiable and open source and public and like lives up to that crypto ethos. Versus just like, I'm going to give a market maker an extra incentive in the background to fill orders that might be like losing them money, right? Which is, I think, like very different and not why a lot of us are here. And so I think like first one is kind of ethos alignment and practical use cases of intents. Things like CalSwap, I think, are actually like really interesting for swaps. But they aren't necessarily always like meaningfully better execution. And depending on the asset, like, you can even create like really liquid pools with very little TVL, right? Like a lot of chains are just like, you know, arbitrarily incentivizing like UniV2 pools. But the reality is like, if you have correlated asset pairs like stable swaps or ETH LST pools or whatever it is, you can actually get like really tight liquidity these days on things like that, whether it's through like V3 plus ALM or like gyroscope ECLPs on Balancer or whatever it is. And so I think like that's the first thing that's meaningful within POL is like the passive LP component. But then the second and like even probably more interesting thing is that like these gauges are as long as the asset is like an ERC20 or a 4626, like those assets can be staked into a gauge, right? And so you can do stuff like incentivize an A token from Aave to increase the supply rate into a money market. That's not something that you can do with solvers. You can incentivize things like if Gains or GMX or any of these are Hyperliquid, right, launched on Bera, they can use BGT emissions on their vault products, right? And so what ends up happening is you're increasing the amount of liquidity that traders have to trade on. That increases the total open interest. That increases the amount of volume that can get processed. That leads to higher fees, even within like the same kind of constraint. And so the idea is like, yes, this is true. But I think like the nuance is that it's much more general as a product. And so it's not designed to be opinionated in the same way intents or RFQs are. And then even for things that are, right, like let's say Hyperliquid launches or there's a Hyperliquid type product that launches a Bera Chain L2, I've even been cooking with Smokey some like really cool kind of degen strategies that you can use for like L1 alignment, where like right now a lot of L2s are like loosely value extractive. Like even if that's the scaling roadmap, I think it's hard to deny that like that is the case. But I think with proof of liquidity and things like restaking, you can potentially actually create like value alignment in a really interesting way.
Like real value alignment, not just social alignment.
Indeed. Exactly right. And so that's one of those things I'm not going to talk much more about. I'm sorry.
Wait, come on. Okay. Wait.
All right. Maybe, but I'm not leaking too much. Yeah, we have to cook still.
Okay. So because, yeah, we have this thing of quote unquote ETH alignment where it's kind of like, oh, we all agree that we won't be above 33%. But it's a social construct that isn't enforced by anything. So I'm curious, like actual value alignment that is ruled by incentives, what that actually looks like. I assume it has something to do with POL and that like has to do with
access. It's a good assumption.
Always a good assumption. I'm getting there.
You're talking to me.
All right. I know. All right.
Next time we catch up when you're back in New York or at ECC or something, I'll bill you on that.
Fair.
But yeah, like the general idea, right, is like there are ways for scaling systems to participate within proof of liquidity, generating economic security for their protocol while also adding economic security and value for the L1 in a way that like strictly almost isn't possible for ETH as efficiently.
Got it. I understand. I want to ask a few more questions. One's for you, Jack, and one's for both of you. And so, Jack, I think it's obvious the up-only flywheel of Bera Chain and how it's working. Like, oh, like more people participate, you know, people are like bribing and volatile tokens, people want to be more degen, it's on the way up, everyone's happy, da-da-da. But then, you know, we all know what happens. Things like what comes up must come down. And so I'm curious, like, how does POL operate in the inverse in a bear market when things are going down, when people are not on risk on and that they're searching for stables and they're turning their BGT into Bera, into stables. Like, how do you make sure the system is stable?
Yeah, it's a great question. And if you talk to Smokey, he will probably like sigh because this is something I have been working with him and like pressing him to think about. And they've done a lot of really good work on it already. But even recently, we were expanding greatly the scope of like actual risk modeling that we're going to do on the strength of the system. Because you're totally right. Like in a universe where the value of tokens that are going to incentive to validators goes down, the fee rate goes down, people burn BGT for Bera, and then maybe even sell their Bera, right? Like that can definitely be a negative flywheel. And that's what I mean by like, there is convexity in the system. And so how do you allow as much upside convexity to exist while like volatility dampening on the downside? That's something we're spending a lot of work on. And I think the reality is that it happens in two different forms, right? And so the first element of this is, you can do stuff like change direction of burn or even like adjust the emission rate of the system depending on market conditions.
Change
right?
direction of burn so I can like turn my
And so like I'm not BGT. Saying that's something we're going to do. I'm saying it's like one of the potential levers that we're looking at. Okay. And so the goal right now for the next 3 months from a risk perspective is to do a bunch of economic risk modeling. So that way we have a baseline of understanding of like, okay, in this market condition, what should governance look at as the primary variables to adjust to ensure the system is healthy, right? It's almost like Olympus range-bound stability in some capacity, like as something you're probably familiar with, right? Like in the baseline range-bound stability, you have this model where like if you get, I forget what the exact number is, plus 15% on either side of the fair value of the treasury assets, you either buy or sell the token. But that then creates this like economic limitation on the upside of the token, right? Versus like what you want to ideally do for something like Bera is have like that downside protection that's materializing in some form, whether that's handled through like the BGT emissions caps or like other variables that we're providing recommendations to governance on, while like allowing the system to capture as much upside in good times as possible, but then storing that value in some meaningful way, right? And so I think that's where it gets really interesting is like, if you can create a system that allows applications to capture the good time value really aggressively, then that can ensure that even in bad times, there's still enough value in the system to prevent like a full negative loop. And so the answer is it's complicated. It's something we're still working on fleshing out really aggressively, but the goal is to like come into mainnet with a bunch of recommendations for governance. Like when you see X and Y, how do I think about these things? Because I think that's like the primary failure we've seen in the past is like,
you just hope
governance figures it out, right? and like, that's not a good model, right? And so I want to make sure that we are at least like providing some initial models and like a set of assumptions and parameters that governance can use as a baseline and then come in over the top and like all the delegates and all these other people that have like strong incentivization to ensure the system stays healthy are the ones that are like really pushing conversation forward from there.
Yeah, like kind of, it's like, oh, we rely on governance and wins aligned. We can figure this out. And then, yeah. But no, that was a really good answer, honestly. I have hope for you guys, especially if you're on board, Jack. Captain Jack, we trust. So, you know, my last question is, you know, Bera Chain, V2 just came out. Everyone's excited. Everyone's on testnet. They're testing around, having fun. What's the roadmap looking like? When launch and like what can people do now to participate in Bera Chain and get upside?
Maybe I'll let Jack get into the details, but from my side, in my role as developer evangelism, I think the best things that you can do now to kind of get up to speed and use testnet as an opportunity to understand POL and, you know, not have any real funds on the line, to really understand what are all the dimensions at play and what are all of the ways that you can strategize to do what makes sense for you, right? It might not be to maximize yield. It might be to align with certain teams, with certain causes, with the longer term strategies around like tokens that may go up in the future. And I think honestly, testnet is a really great time because it's something that's so new and it is something that is like a multi-step kind of multi-dimensional thing. That's not something you just like wake up and press a button. I really do think this is a great time for people and teams to kind of simulate what participating in POL would look like on V2. And, you know, also consider building here. And I'll give my little quick spiel that, you know, I got a lot of this from Smokey's talks in the past. And it's what I say when I talk to developers now. It's like, when you're choosing an ecosystem to build on, you know, before it kind of used to be like, yeah, you pick the best tech. And now it's kind of like tech has mostly converged to the same thing across ecosystems, right? Like you're mostly, especially if you're staying within the EVM world, like it's all mostly the same. The thing that you should really be optimizing for is the level of distribution that you can get and how quickly you can bootstrap your liquidity. And I think like for teams that are kind of choosing a home or thinking of where to go next, really learning about Bera Chain and taking the time to deploy on V2 and just like see what new dimensions open up in terms of how you can bootstrap liquidity faster and cheaper with POL.
Got it. You heard it here, Debs.
Yeah,
distribution. That's the name of the game. Sorry, go check.
No, you're good, man. I think that's right. It's always, I think that's like one of the cool things about being at Bera is like the majority of the team is like really crypto or DeFi native, depending on who you are, right? And as a result, like the amount that we can be in the trenches with teams is like very high. And like giving them thoughtful product feedback and GTM advice and, you know, mechanism design support and all those other things. For Bera V2, I'd say like the main things to do are get on the testnet. There's a handful of different faucets available these days. If you're a developer looking to deploy an application or deploy contracts, find myself or Cami. I think we're generally both pretty responsive on socials, and we can help you get set up with some testnet Bera to get those things deployed. On the user side, I think the way to think about it is like interact with the core dApps, Bex, the DEX, BEN, which is the money market, BERPS, which is the perps exchange, and like swapping into Honey. Those are like the kind of core primitives. You can take your LP tokens or your Bend Honey Supply asset and stake those things in BGT Station, delegate to validators, start participating within proof of liquidity, play around with it, give us product feedback as we approach mainnet. And then on top of that, at this point, there's a good number of third-party applications that have launched on the testnet. You can start to get an understanding of like who's live through places like Bearland or through the Bear ecosystem page. And just try things out. I think we'll be in testnet for a little while. Still, I can't give too much away, but there'll be a little bit of time to play around with it. As a result, I think those that understand proof of liquidity the best have the potential to like really, really generate strong value in the early days of Bearchain, because, you know, in this reality where today, especially on the DeFi side, but even on like the blockchain side, it feels like we have a bunch of metas that are functionally solved, right? Like everyone knows how pool two farming works. Everyone knows how like basic DeFi yield works and like Pendle loops and like airdrop farming and like all these other things, right? It's like, all right, like I'm just going to go deploy capital. Yeah. And so the result is like anytime you have a novel system, there is information asymmetry on launch. And like the more comfortable you can get with the system early on, whether it's as a validator, an application, or a user, the more value you'll be able to generate in the early days. So I definitely recommend checking it out.
Yeah. And a slight plug for users or for listeners who are out there and they're like, okay, I want to participate, but I don't know how, like, where do I get started? One, look at the developer docs. Two, follow our new developer Twitter called Bearchain Devs. We're going to be doing live streams there and helping people just get started on the basics using the native dApps, understanding how to delegate to validators, understanding incentives. So if you're a listener and you're like, I want to do it, but I'm scared, you can come to Bearchain Devs on Twitter.
I heard they're going to do makeup tutorials too, right?
We're going to do concealer reviews.
Yeah, let's go. All right, guys, this has been awesome. But before we go, we like to do like a wrap up of like lightning round questions. I'll just do one. I like asking this one because it helps me find future people to put on the show. But who would you guys recommend as a guest? Who do you want to see on Flywheel? Cam, you can go first.
Who would I want to see as a guest on Flywheel? Honestly, I think a really great guest would be David Phelps.
I had him on.
Okay. Do you want me to pick another one?
Yeah.
Okay, fuck. someone who you've never had that would be a great guest. Oh, you know, you should have you had Lily, the president of the Solana Foundation?
I don't think so.
Okay, well, she's a fucking boss and you should totally get her on. I'm going to pull up her. Yeah, Lily Liu. She's the co-founder of Anagram, which is a VC fund. She's a president of the Solana Foundation. She did a lot of work on Osmosis and she's just generally like a boss.
A beast. So you should get her on. Nice. All right, Lily. Jack, who do you want to see? This is your third time on, right?
Yeah. I'm going to talk my book a little bit more aggressively because I'm pretty sure you've brought on everyone I've recommended in the past. I think last time I told you to bring on Corey from Dolomite. And
I did bring on Corey.
Yeah, you guys had a sick conversation, which I really enjoyed listening to. I think like it would be cool to chat through things with some of the teams in the eco that are doing, I think, pretty interesting work. Off the top of my head, and there's a lot more that I'm omitting. And so if you're an eco team listening to this and I forgot you, I'm sorry. But I think like off the top of my head, the some of the people that are building really cool things are Concrete, which is doing some really cool like fixed rate, fixed term lending products and then structured products built on top of that. Gummy, which is Oracle-less lending. Kodiak, which is AMM plus ALM. Exponents, which is building almost like infinity pool style AMM based perp leverage, and IVX, which is building like 0-day options products. And so those are some of the people I think that are doing cool work in DeFi. And there are a lot of new primitives that are coming out. Like I think the Dolomite one is always a good one, but even expand to that, like the Euler V2 team, I think would also be really cool to have because one of the narratives I've been really interested in for quite a while, and I think will only get more meaningful from here on out, are like these so-called modular money markets, where in this universe of like increasingly risk-off platforms that have like centralized parameter set, like Aave and Maker and all these others, having the ability to spin up like really customized money market vaults with a bunch of incremental functionality is, I think, something really meaningful for DeFi, especially. Like, I think we've talked about this in the past, but my mindset's always been that like the unlock for DeFi from a capital efficiency perspective isn't under-collateralized lending the way everyone kind of thought it was last cycle. It's actually like, how do I price and rehypothecate things effectively with safe risk all the way down? And so that's like, I think where we're kind of heading, right? Is like, yeah, you can unlock capital efficiency by allowing people to spend more than they have in the short term, but you can also unlock capital efficiency by allowing people to gain leverage on assets.
That's a good reframe. Possible. I feel like we can do a whole episode on that.
Oh, I could talk about that all day.
Yeah. We'll save it for next time, guys. But before we go, let everybody know your social media, where they can find you, Bearchain, all that fun stuff.
Yeah. Bearchain, I think, is at Bearchain. Pretty easy one. I'm at Jack Melnick _ on Twitter. I'm the guy with the bear head, PFP.
And I'm at Cammy in this thing with an A. Cammy in this thing.
Cammy in this thing.
Yeah.
Cammy and Jack in this thing. Oh, guys, thanks so much for coming on. We'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.
Bye. See ya. Thank you, everybody, for watching this episode of Flywheel. I'm your host, DeFi Dave. We just had on Camilla and Jack from Bearchain. We went all in on POL. We went in on the engineering perspective. We went in on the super DeFi, DGen, GigaRain perspective. So I hope you all enjoyed the show. If you want to catch every episode of Flywheel, make sure you go ahead and subscribe, hit that bell button, leave us a comment, let us know what you think, give us a like on YouTube. Make sure to follow us on all of our socials on Twitter, TikTok, and Telegram at Flywheel DeFi. You can follow me on Twitter at DeFiDay22. And we'll see you next week. Peace. Everything said on this episode is not financial or tax advice. This channel is strictly for educational purposes and is not an investment advice or solicitation to buy or sell any assets or to make any financial decisions. This video is not tax advice whatsoever. Please talk to your accountant and do your own research.